This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. The U.S. House January 6th committee is closing out its set of summer hearings with its most detailed focus yet on the investigation's main focus, that is former U.S. President Donald Trump. The panel has been examining Trump's actions on January 6, 2021, as hundreds of his supporters broke into the U.S. Capitol, going through the deadly afternoon in minute-by-minute fashion to show how long it took the former president to call off the rioters. The panel was focusing on 187 minutes that day between Trump's call for his supporters to march to the Capitol and when he told them to go home. U.S. President Joe Biden says that he is doing great after testing positive for COVID-19. The White House said Thursday the 79-year-old Biden is experiencing very mild symptoms, including a stuffy nose, fatigue, and a cough. He's taking Paxlovid, an antiviral drug designed to reduce the severity of the disease. Biden is fully vaccinated and getting 2 doses of the Pfizer coronavirus vaccine shortly before taking office. First booster shot in September and an additional dose on March 30th. The White House COVID-19 coordinator, Dr. Ashish Jha, told reporters at a briefing that the president will isolate himself for 5 days and can return to his usual activities after a negative test. Biden himself tweeted to the nation that I'm doing great. Thank you for your concern. Again, U.S. President Joe Biden does say that he's doing just fine after testing positive for COVID-19. And the White House said that he is experiencing very mild symptoms thus far. More at voanews.com. This is VOA News. The deliveries of Western arms have been crucial for Ukraine's efforts to fend off Russian attacks in the nearly five-month-old war. Ukrainian officials praise the billions of dollars of Western weapon systems they've already received, but they say that their numbers are too small to turn the tide of the war. Ukraine's First Lady was in Washington on Wednesday to appeal to the U.S. Congress for air defense systems. The small numbers of U.S.-made multiple rocket launchers have given Ukraine a long-sought capability to strike Russian targets from a safe distance with precision, and supplies of Western heavy artillery systems, armored vehicles, and other weapons have been essential to replenishing Kyiv's equipment losses. The U.S. Supreme Court will not allow the Biden administration to implement a policy that prioritizes the deportation of people in the country illegally who pose the greatest public safety risk. The court's order Thursday leaves a policy frozen nationwide for now. The vote was 5-4, with conservative Justice Amy Coney Barrett joining liberal justices Sonia Sotomayor, Elena Kagan, and Ketanji Brown Jackson, saying they would have allowed the Biden administration to put in place the guidance. The court also announced it would hear arguments in the case in late November. The justices were acting on the administration's emergency request to the court following conflicting arguments on various cases. Meanwhile, a majority of Americans say Congress should pass a law guaranteeing access to legal abortion nationwide. That is according to a new poll from the Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs Research. The U.S. Supreme Court's recent decision overturning Roe v. Wade asserted that abortion is not constitutional, right, and handed states the authority to severely restrict or ban abortion. The poll shows that many Americans back some restrictions on abortion, especially after the first trimester. It also shows that the most extreme measures introduced in some Republican-led states are at odds with the public and with many of the people who live with them. And recapping our top story, the U.S. House January 6th committee is now closing out its set of summer hearings with its most detailed focus yet on the investigation's main target, that's former U.S. President Donald Trump. And the panel has been examining his actions on January 6th of last year as hundreds of his supporters broke into the U.S. Capitol going through the deadly afternoon in minute-by-minute fashion. There's more at voanews.com. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Thank you. Today is Friday, July 22nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedofo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, U.S. President Joe Biden says he is, quote, doing well, unquote, after a positive COVID-19 test.
Hey, folks, guess you heard. This morning I tested positive for COVID. But I've been double vaccinated, double boosted. Symptoms are mild. And I really appreciate your inquiry and your concerns. But I'm doing well.
Preparations are underway for the mass rollout of the world's first malaria vaccine.
The World Health Organization says Gavi's multi-million dollar funding marks a key advance in the fight against one of Africa's most severe public health threats.
And Italy's president dissolves parliament, clearing the way for an early election. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. U.S. President Joe Biden has mild symptoms after testing positive Thursday morning for COVID-19. Details from VOA's chief national correspondent Steve Herman in Washington.
According to White House officials, President Biden felt fatigued Wednesday night and did not sleep well, waking up Thursday with a runny nose and a dry cough. After tests confirmed he had the coronavirus, the president continued to work from the White House residence. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre told reporters, this day was inevitable.
Look, we knew this was going to happen.
During an hour-long media briefing at which every question was about the president's condition or the coronavirus in general, the White House COVID-19 response coordinator, Dr. Ashish Jha, said Biden is unlikely to become seriously ill.
Because the president is fully vaccinated, double boosted, his risk of serious illness is dramatically lower.
According to the president's physician, Biden is taking the oral antiviral treatment Paxlovid, which is recommended for older patients who have tested positive for COVID-19. Officials say the president will remain isolated for at least 5 days. Steve Herman, VOA News, Washington.
Russian shelling has pounded a densely populated area in Ukraine's second largest city, as well as several other cities across the country. The attacks came a day after a top Russian envoy declared that Russia is seeking to carve out more territory in Ukraine. U.S. defense officials are closely monitoring the situation as Kyiv asks for more lethal weapons to push back Russia's advances into its territories. For the assessment of the Pentagon on the conflict, I spoke with VOA's national security correspondent Jeff Seldon.
The Pentagon, military officials, U.S. intelligence officials, Western intelligence officials have pretty much been on the same page when it comes to what is happening right now on the ground in Ukraine, and specifically in eastern Ukraine in the Donbas, where Russian forces are making a very slow advance, taking some territory. Western officials, U.S. officials describe this as a grinding advance. Advance that even as Russian forces take ground, for which they have to pay a dear cost for every kilometer. They describe it as almost a slugfest of artillery. And they note that while Ukraine has been retreating, the retreats by Ukrainian forces have been mostly strategic, and that with the provision of some new weapon systems from the West, specifically the HIMARS from the United States, that Ukrainian forces have been able to inflict substantial damage on Russian forces, and in particular have been able to start picking apart and destroying key targets like weapon depots that the Russians are using and command and control centers that the Russians have set up, sometimes far behind the Russian front lines.
Does that mean that all the equipment flowing into Ukraine are having the desired impact, or there's something else going on?
There are a couple of things that are going on. U.S. military officials have praised the ability of Ukrainian forces to incorporate some of the new equipment that's been sent over, specifically the HIMARS, these long-range multiple launch rocket systems that can target 70 kilometers away with high precision. They say that the Ukrainian forces have used them well, have been very good about making sure that they've not been hit, despite Russian claims, and used to good effect. There's also continuing evidence, according to Western officials and U.S. officials in particular, that Russia is still plagued by many of the problems that hurt its campaign in the initial days of the invasion. That integration between Russian land combat and its use of artillery, its use of air power, it's not been coordinated as well as one might have expected before the invasion began. That many of the troops that are fighting are considered, in the terms of some intelligence officials, they're being used as cannon fodder. They don't have a high degree of training. They aren't well equipped, and so they take heavy losses.
It's now obvious and clear that Russia has a more bigger ambition when it comes to taking Ukrainian territory. Does this affect the overall calculation and plans of the Pentagon?
U.S. military officials, all the way up to Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin, have been very, very clear when they speak to the media, when they speak to the press, about not wanting to send Ukraine systems it is not prepared to integrate into its forces, that it can't handle, or that it doesn't have the training for. Early on, there was a huge push to make sure Ukrainian forces had Soviet-style weaponry, Soviet-made weaponry, because that's what they had been using. Over the months since February, slowly, the amount of ammo for some of these systems, the rockets, it's just nobody's making it anymore, so the Ukrainian forces are switching over now to what they call NATO-ready, Western-made systems, and they've been able to integrate that well, but training's still going on. So, for example, the HIMAR multiple-launch rocket systems that have been so effective, according to the U.S. and the Ukrainians, so far, about 8 of them are operational in Ukraine. 4 are either in Ukraine or are being delivered right now, and the U.S. has promised another 4, but they've only been able to train so far 200 Ukrainian troops to operate those systems. And making sure that the Ukrainians are in position to receive and make use of these weapon systems has been part of the big push by the U.S. and its partners to make sure that Ukraine can continue the war.
That's VOA National Security Correspondent Jeff Seldon speaking with me from Washington, D.C. As Ukrainian First Lady Olena Zelenska reminded the U.S. Congress of the human costs of Russia's invasion of her country, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said Moscow's military aims were no longer confined only to the east of the country. VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
Ukrainian First Lady Olena Zelenska received a standing ovation from members of both chambers of the U.S. Congress on Wednesday. She said that although the wives of presidents usually focus on peaceful affairs, such as education, she could not stand by while Russia destroyed her people and her country.
I am asking for something now I would never want to ask. I am asking for weapons. Weapons that would not be used to wage a war on somebody else's land, but to protect one's home and the right to wake up alive in that home. I'm asking for air defense systems in order for rockets not to kill children in their strollers.
As Zelenska shared video images showing the human toll of the war, in Moscow, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said Russia's military aims were not focused only on the east, and he claimed Ukraine was not serious about peace negotiations.
They simply will never be able to articulate anything that would deserve the serious attention of serious people. We've already figured it out.
Asked about Russia's military progress, General Mark Milley, the Joint Chiefs of Staff chairman, had this to say.
So the bottom line is the cost is very high. The gains are very low. There is a grinding war of attrition that is occurring in the Luhansk-Donbass region, the two oblasts of Donbass. And to answer your question about is the Donbass lost, no, it's not lost yet.
U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin said that 5 months after Russia's unprovoked invasion, Ukraine's military is still fighting and Kyiv is still standing. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
Ethiopia's civil war among Tigrayan forces, the federal government and regional forces, has ruined some occupied towns and displaced millions of people. The United Nations says about 295,000 people are now returning to the towns in a remote corner of Ethiopia's northern Afar region. A handful of locals have already gone back to their deserted towns to rebuild their lives. Henry Wilkins reports from Ethiopia's northern Afar region.
In the mountains in Ethiopia's northern Afar region, the district of Kanaba was occupied by Tigrayan forces until late April. Locals say you can still see Tigrayan forces' positions in the hills that border Tigray. Although the town is still mostly empty, civilians who fled violence are gradually returning to rebuild their lives since forces aligned with the Tigray People's Liberation Front, or the TPLF, left behind a trail of destruction. Among those civilians is Mohamed Abdullah Mohamed, a local administrator. He says many people have returned to their homes, but many of those properties have been ransacked. He says there are no shops or markets anymore, and that there's severe hunger, with many children suffering from hunger and lack of food. UN and local authorities say of around 300,000 people displaced by the conflict in the Afar region, about 295,000 have spontaneously returned to their homes in recent weeks. Stina Abdallah returned to the nearby town of Bahale in June with her son. She explains that when the TPLF entered the city, she fled with her family to save herself, leaving behind everything, including their homes and livestock. We did not find anyone to help us. We ran away. But now we have returned. Everything is gone. The TPLF took with them everything they could steal and destroyed everything, even the houses, she added. Local officials showed VOA many homes and businesses that had been burned or ransacked. The TPLF did not respond to a request for comment on the destruction of civilian buildings in Afar, but it has denied targeting civilians in the past. Rights groups accuse all parties to Ethiopia's conflict of abuse against civilians and infrastructure. Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch say in other parts of the country, such as the disputed region of Western Tigray, ethnic cleansing against Tigrayans has taken place. In Afar, the local administrator in the town of Arepti, Mohamed Aliou, says loss of infrastructure is taking a major toll. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Northern Afar, Ethiopia.
In other news, Italian President Sergio Mattarella dissolved parliament on Thursday, clearing the way for an early election after Prime Minister Mario Draghi quit following the collapse of his National Unity government. Mattarella said the election must be held within 70 days, leaving the government to fix the precise date. A government source told Reuters that the national election will be held on September 25th. Draghi, an unelected former central banker who has led a broad coalition for almost 18 months, resigned earlier on Thursday and has been asked to stay on in a caretaker capacity. For more on this story and other breaking news, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Remember to connect with us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Search for VOA Africa. You are listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Preparations are underway for the mass rollout of the world's first malaria vaccine funded by Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance, for nearly $160 million to protect millions of children in Africa. Lisa Schneier reports for VOA from Geneva.
World Health Organization says Gavi's multi-million dollar funding marks a key advance in the fight against one of Africa's most severe public health threats. It notes that countries in sub-Saharan Africa bear the brunt of the yearly toll of more than 240 million global cases of malaria, including more than 600,000 reported deaths. The main victims are children under age 5. WHO Regional Director for Africa, Machidiso Moeti, says one child dies every minute in Africa, with catastrophic consequences for families, communities, and national development. The vaccine was introduced in Africa in 2019. Since then, more than 1.3 million children have benefited from the life-saving inoculations in three pilot countries, Ghana, Kenya, and Malawi. Moeti says those countries have reported a 30% drop in hospitalizations of children with severe malaria and a 9% reduction in child deaths.
So if delivered at scale, millions of new cases could be averted and tens of thousands of lives saved every year. We were encouraged to see that the demand for the vaccine is high, even in the context of COVID-19, with the first dose reaching between 73% to over 90% coverage.
Managing Director of Country Programs at Gavi, Thabani Mafosa, calls the vaccine the most effective tool in the fight against malaria. He says the vaccine will save children's lives. However, he notes demand for the life-saving product will outstrip supply.
Our challenge during this critical phase is to ensure the doses we have available are used as effectively and equitably as possible. With this in mind, Gavi today is opening an application window for malaria support.
He says the three pilot countries will have the first crack at applying for and receiving funding. He adds that those countries already have experience in rolling out the vaccine, So practically speaking, he says, they will require little help in setting up their systems to get the operation underway. Mafosa says a second round of funding will take place at the end of the year. At that time, he says, other countries that have moderate to high cases of severe malaria will be able to submit applications for support. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Online sales boomed during the COVID-19 pandemic, including in some parts of Africa, where industry analysts say online trade is expected to grow by more than half in the next 3 years. The continent's online market potential faces numerous challenges, though. For VOA, Linda Giftash reports from Johannesburg.
Small businesses like Tsepo Jeans, a denim retailer in Johannesburg, are gearing up for a boom in e-commerce. Some parts of Africa have seen double-digit growth in online shopping year over year, with more than 334 million users today. Market data firm Statista projects the trend will continue, topping 519 million shoppers by 2025. For denim seller Tsepo Malala, this doesn't come as a surprise.
The Tsepo brand truly started on social media. You know, before we even had any stores, we were online. So I've seen the growth since day one.
The brand, which launched in 2015, has survived the pandemic through its online store. The digital traffic has been maintained even after the reopening of physical shops. Experts say it is a trend driven largely by the rise of smartphone access across Africa. Mercy Mpingjira is the director of the School of Consumer Intelligence and Information Systems at the University of Johannesburg.
Internet penetration was low in the early years of e-commerce, and because of that, the levels of e-commerce were low. But now, with the coming in of mobile telephony, it has changed things around. We're talking about over 80% of people on the continent having access to mobile phones, and that is enabling them to access things online and be able to also transact online.
Mpingjira says other challenges continue to hinder e-commerce in Africa. Many people do not use banks, complicating digital payments. There are also logistical issues with delivery, with traditional mail being slow and inconvenient. Unreliable postal systems, though, have paved the way for new courier companies to emerge. Craig Pitchers is the chief operating officer for The Courier Guy, a delivery business in South Africa.
The postal service is not that convenient. So if you look at the number of courier players in the market, and the community is spoiled for choice in terms of who they can use. One of the areas we've innovated around the growth in e-commerce is the introduction of our electronic lockers, which we call Pudo, pick-up, drop-off.
More Africans are embracing online shopping, but experts, as well as retailers like Mohlala, say it's not replaced the experience of going into physical stores.
From a growth perspective, I think our stores, our brick and mortar, still doing far much better compared to our digital presence at the moment. Kind of gave us like a platform to have more customers coming in, touching our product, feeling our product, and we could also execute on our bespoke experience.
While some consumers will always prefer shopping in person, e-commerce has opened up a new way for small businesses to reach new clients. Linda Giftash for VOA News, Johannesburg.
This is Science in a Minute.
Astronomers say they have discovered the first dormant stellar mass black hole outside of the Milky Way. A black hole is considered dormant if it doesn't produce high levels of X-rays. The discovery was made as the result of 6 years of observations with the European Southern Observatory's Very Large Telescope. The black hole is part of a binary system identified as VFTS-243 and is located in the Tarantula Nebula in the neighboring Large Magellanic Cloud. The black hole is said to have a mass 9 times that of our Sun, and the hot blue star companion it orbits is 25 times more massive than the Sun. Writing in the journal Nature Astronomy, the researchers say that the star that led to the black hole's formation didn't explode in a supernova, but rather just collapsed into itself under its own gravity and disappeared. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London!
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour.
Whoa.
Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA. or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on The Voice of America.
And to all our VOA listeners, please note we have moved our programs to a new website, voaafrica.com, from voanews.com. There you will find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com, and thanks for listening. This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voaafrica.com. Until next time, I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Developing countries often lack the essential infrastructure to help navigate global shocks, like the recent COVID-19 pandemic. As a result, they feel the impacts more acutely and have a harder time recovering, explained President Joe Biden at the recent G7 summit in Germany. To mitigate such impacts, the G7 is launching the Partnership for Global Infrastructure and Investment. The United States will mobilize $200 billion in public and private capital over the next 5 years to invest in health, digital connectivity, gender equality and equity, climate and energy security. Under the category of health, the United States, its G7 partners, and the World Bank are investing in a new industrial-scale vaccine manufacturing facility in Senegal. When complete, it will have the potential to produce hundreds of millions of doses of vaccines annually. That's why the Digital Investment Program is mobilizing $335 million in investment capital for digital connectivity, infrastructure, and digital financial services that strengthen open, interoperable, reliable, inclusive, and secure digital ecosystems in emerging markets. The U.S. government also supported the bid by an American company, Subcom, for a $600 million contract to build a global subsea telecommunications cable. History has demonstrated that when women and girls are free to fully participate in society, there is a positive impact across their communities, said President Biden.
The United States is committing $50 million over 5 years to the World Bank Global Child Care Incentive Fund. This public-private partnership, supported by several G7 partners, will help countries build infrastructure that makes it easier for women to participate equally in the labor force.
In order to protect against climate change, it is vital to invest in clean energy projects. For example, the U.S. just facilitated a new partnership between two American firms and the government of Angola to invest $2 billion in building new solar projects in Angola. And in Romania, the American company NuScale Power will build a first-of-its-kind small modular reactor plant. This will help bring online zero-emission nuclear energy to Europe faster, more cheaply, and more efficiently. This isn't aid or charity, declared President Biden. It's an investment that will boost all of our economies, and it's a chance for us to share our positive vision for the future and let communities around the world see for themselves the concrete benefits of partnering with democracies.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.